You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Good morning and welcome. Welcome to Matinair on Air. Jane Matinair, Greg Buck, Calvin Butenoff, coming to you live from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us. You can call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment as well if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Really busy show today. Mm-hmm. Our friend and colleague and host of Amicus, a law review from 9 to 11 across the network on Saturday mornings, Jim Santel, is going to be joining us. There had been some big decisions from the U.S. Supreme Court that should concern all of us.
Absolutely.
Especially regarding deportations and the Trump administration's ability to do this without due process. So Jim Santel will be joining us after the 9:30 news. In hour number two, Brittany Merlot will be here for a little weather and wine. Civic Media meteorologist.
Award-winning.
Multi-award-winning. Ooh. I know. Looks like we have some more storms coming in later on this afternoon.
Yeah.
And then they're going to clear out of here. But I looked ahead to the forecast and it looks like Sunday is going to be up in the lower 90s again. So Brittany will be here to explain everything that is coming, what we're watching for. That's at 10:20. 10:35, the Acme Packing Company's Paul Noonan here to talk all things sports. I know we will be talking about Miz.
The Miz.
It's The Miz.
Which is funny because there's a wrestler who goes by the name of The Miz as well.
Oh, yeah.
But the Brewers are crushing it right now, and it is interesting.
It's impressive.
It's impressive. It's interesting. It's fun. But it's also, as a Brewers fan, you're like, okay.
It makes you worry, doesn't it? Don't take my heart and stomp on it again.
Let's not get too excited.
Right. And then at the end of the show, we'll wrap it up as we always do with This Shouldn't Be a Thing. Today it is the Bear Grill edition. There's a visual element involved, so I encourage you to stick around for that. We did have some decisions by the Wisconsin Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Kind of a surprise.
Yeah.
For some of us. Joanne Krulutz and Lucas Hunt from Civic Media have a great article on the Civic Media website. Go to the news section. State Supreme Court overrules Governor Evers' veto of GOP education bill. Funds to be released. The Wisconsin Supreme Court, with a liberal majority, has handed a victory to the GOP-controlled legislature following the court's decision to reject Governor Evers' veto of a bill that would invest $50 million into student literacy. The Joint Finance Committee has now agreed to release the funds. The co-chairs of the Joint Finance Committee, Howard Markline and Max Born, say that the governor's actions were unconstitutional when he used his veto pen.
Mm-hmm. And that is what the Supreme Court has said unanimously.
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 Yes. A couple of unanimous decisions yesterday by the Wisconsin Supreme Court. We're not going to delve too deeply into this. Pat Kreitler is going to join us next Tuesday.
Yeah.
And Pat had a really wonderful explainer of this whole thing and the entire process. I encourage you to go back and listen to Pat's podcast. Mm-hmm. And again, you can find that at civicmedia.us. Just click on shows. But the way Pat explained it this morning, some of the issue, again, is they're looking at procedural things.
Yep. Yeah. That's in the court of law. In a court of law, procedure is
everything.
You cannot... It can't be like, well, if you promise never to do it again,
right.
if the court sees that the procedure has been violated, then that's the violation. And that's why I saw a lot of individuals getting very much like, what? It's like, this is a unanimous decision. And if it's a procedural decision, then there's not a whole lot of, you can do what Tony Evers did, and he came out and said he thought this was a very bad decision. He said it was unconscionable. He said it was wrong. But at the end of the conversation, he also said, I accept it. Because...
What a thought.
It's almost alien at this point to see our leaders accept decisions that don't go their way.
Yeah, that go and don't go in their favor. Who would have thought that was actually possible? Governor Evers, after this decision was announced, said, quote, I will never apologize for fighting for our kids and our schools. Not today, not ever. Nearly $50 million to help improve our kids' reading has sat unspent in Madison for 2 years because Republican lawmakers have refused to release it. Mm-hmm. I've spent 2 years fighting tirelessly to get Republicans to release that money, including suing to force them to do so. 12 lawmakers shouldn't be able to obstruct resources that were already approved by the legislature and the governor to get our kids up to speed. As you said, Governor Evers said it is unconscionable. Mm-hmm. The Wisconsin Supreme Court is allowing the legislature's indefinite obstruction to go unchecked. But he said, now again, I urge Republicans to release that nearly $50 million investment to improve reading and literacy across our state.
And maybe that's a question we can ask Jim if we have a chance to get to it, but that is a bigger discussion point. Is it's if the court has decided on procedural grounds that this was not right and against Tony Evers, that's one thing. But this isn't the only money that the JFC is sitting on.
No.
So that is that something that can be taken to court?
Will that
be coming
next?
Explored? Because right now you've got the PFAS money that needs to be released. $125 million needs to be released. It's needed to be released since, I don't know, I've been at this company. So I think there is another issue here at play, is that every time they get a hold of money that needs to go out to the world, if it's something they don't like, they'll hold on to it.
Yeah,
and
they sit on it.
Doesn't help the people of Wisconsin, you know, in a Robin Voss representative democracy.
Well, Robin, it's Robin's money, and we're just lucky if we get to benefit from it.
Yeah.
Essentially. Yeah. The other decision that came out from Wisconsin Supreme Court yesterday, court refuses to hear challenges to Wisconsin's congressional district boundaries. The second time in 2 years, the court has declined to hear challenges from Democrats. Yeah. The decision was made without explanation from the court. That is a setback. This from WPR for Democrats who had been hoping for new lines. Mm-hmm. Democrats had asked the court to redraw the maps, which would have put two of Wisconsin's six congressional seats currently held by the GOP into play. But as I mentioned, this is the second time in as many years the court refused to hear that challenge.
Big win for GOP here in Wisconsin.
It is. Another unanimous decision.
Yeah, absolutely. And it sucks, but to me that's an emotional response to a non-emotional answer from them. Like they're not sitting here going, well, you know, like, how do I feel about this? They're looking at the reasons why it's based in procedure. It's based in facts. And if they decided not to take it, it's a liberal majority court. I don't think they're in the pocket of the GOP. I'm not going to sit there and spin conspiracy theories. So if they didn't hire it, there's probably a good reason why they didn't. And that just means that those who want to run for those seats have to run harder.
Yeah. And I also think it's just interesting to me that the whining, it's just the whining that constantly comes from one side. And I would like to see some acknowledgement from the Republicans, mm-hmm. that the governor has accepted this decision that went against him, mm-hmm. instead of, I don't know, suing the Wisconsin Supreme Court, which seems to be something that the administration is kind of really embracing.
Well, I mean, it's.
And will this Supreme Court get any credit now?
For making
decisions that go against the Democratic governor? Because I remember all the warnings when we were leading up to this last election. Oh, my gosh, you give it over to the liberals. And, the judgments that will be coming will be unbelievably wacko.
And this may be an unpopular opinion, but I don't think we should be doing either of it on either side. Because when Amy Coney Barrett, Neil Gorsuch, and Brett Kavanaugh came to the Supreme Court, we thought it was going to be the death and destruction of this country period. At least in the case of Amy Coney Barrett, she's made some decisions on the side of the liberal justices that have been confounded and anger the Trump administration.
Yeah,
I think when it comes to the Supreme Court, whether you're talking about the state or the country, they're going to make decisions that you don't like. And some of them are going to have huge impact. I'm not going to say Dobbs wasn't important. It's an important point in this country. But when it comes to the Supreme Court, they like to spin them as like, oh, if it's liberals, it'll be nothing but birth control and communism in the street.
Right.
But it's not. And we overplay it. And no, to answer your question, Jane, the Republicans will give them no credit. Because if you look at their response after the decision was made regarding the Joint Finance Committee, it was nothing but laced with Republican talking points about how terrible Tony Evers are and the Democrats and how they're trying to tax and spend. It's like they're never going to stop playing politics with these things, and they're never going to stop using the Supreme Courts as a puppet and a way of getting of scaring people into voting one way, because if we have liberal justices.
Well, Jane, I know where it's all going to hell.
If we have conservative Judge Hagedorn. Judge Hagedorn has
been a big disappointment to some.
So, I mean, for me personally, and that's something I learned in school, is it's just like when it comes especially to the Supreme Court, it's not totally without emotion, but whenever there's a decision like this that comes down, my thought is always like, okay, well, then there are reasons.
Well, they're looking at the law. They should be looking at the law.
And that's why they publish decisions and they put forth and they give you precedent. And you might not like it, but you kind of have to swallow it and say, all right, that's a battle for another day.
Well, and I'm sure this will come up again.
Yeah,
because, again, they made this decision without giving any explanations, at least as far as the new lines.
Well, and that's one I would like an answer to, because if it's the second time in as many years and they're saying no and they're not saying why, then those who want to fight for different congressional maps, how do they, I don't want to say improve, but how do they come back with new information?
Well,
what do they have to go on?
One of the criticisms I saw this morning, it was the Elias group that brought one of these lawsuits trying to push for redrawn lines. And one criticism I saw this morning was that they used the same argument that they used 2 years ago. They didn't bring anything new to this argument. And why they thought they were, maybe they thought because, again, that it's liberal controlled now, maybe they thought there was going to be a different response.
I think that's fair. I think that's a fair assumption. I won't say it's the reason. I don't know why, but I think it's a fair assumption. It's like, well, we have new people and they all seem to, you know, which way their bread is buttered. But so, yeah. So, but then the court might have to say like, hey, come back with something more, be more persuasive.
Try some different arguments. The last two didn't work.
Yeah, exactly.
I know.
But yeah, I just.
Well, and again, I just think we can all take a collective breath.
Yep.
And you're right. It's ridiculous of me to expect that the liberally controlled Wisconsin Supreme Court would get any props from the other side, but. One can hope.
Well, do you know what though? I'll give props then to Tony Evers, who has his emotions in it and he has his opinions in it. But at the end of the day, he's not gonna yell at the court. He's not gonna yell at Republicans. He's not gonna yell at the media. He's just gonna say, "All right, that's it."
Jim from Brookfield texting in. Good morning. No, the state Supreme Court will not get any credit for not siding with the Democrats. Robin Voss will be shouting bias as soon as a decision goes against the Republicans. Jim from Brookfield, thank you so much for checking in, Jim. Stay with us when we return. Oh, yes, the most competent administration in history. More details on the other side. Stay with us. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Good morning and welcome. Welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Dr. Slide on the board. Coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us. Call or text at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. We got Friday tomorrow. Free ticket. Fridays are back. Starting tomorrow morning with Pat Kreitlow from 6 to 9. Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. He will have a keyword for you. Then we will here on Matt Nair on Air from 9 to 11. Another shot with Tom Hartman from 11 to 2. Todd Alba 2 to 4 and Maggie Dawn 4 to 6. Each of us will have a keyword for you. You want to text in via the Civic Media app. And then you're in the running for a 4-pack of Milwaukee Brewers club level tickets.
Are those club levels nice?
They have cushy seats.
Cushy seats?
Cushy seats.
Next thing you're going to tell me, they have like a private entrance.
They do.
What?
And access to bathrooms, which for some of us is very important.
Which nowhere else in the stadium do
you can't. There are no bathrooms.
You hold it for three to four hours.
That's right. There are no bathrooms. But in this instance, you have bathrooms. Be listening tomorrow, starting with Pat, for free ticket Fridays. Make sure you have the Civic Media app. It's absolutely free. If you don't have it, download it today.
And spelling counts.
It does count. Absolutely. Wanted to start off with this because we've talked numerous times, tragically, about the incredible competence of the Trump administration. And I still maintain they don't game anything out until the end. They don't look for consequences. They don't think if we do A, here is what could happen with B, C, and D. I don't think they look at those things.
I don't. Yeah, I think that goes without saying now. I don't think that's a, that just makes, to say otherwise, I believe, would be ridiculous. To say that they're sitting in a room, like a war room, and planning things, boiler room, here are the strategies.
And if this happens, what could happen from this? And what could happen from this? Here is yet another example of how they do not game things out until the end. From NBC News, fired, rehired, and fired again. Some NOAA employees now are getting letters demanding money.
What?
At least three workers who worked for NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, who were fired, rehired, and fired again, now say they've gotten debt notices from the government to pay it back for health care coverage, which is coverage they never had. These three former NOAA employees shared letters with NBC that say demand notice for payment, claiming the former NOAA employees owe money, sometimes hundreds of dollars, and interest, warning that the debt would be reported to a credit bureau if it is not paid.
I don't understand. What? I've been fired before. Mm-hmm. I've never gotten a letter saying
you owe me?
Owe you for anything. That doesn't seem like something that should be a thing. I'm truly confused.
This is NBC News reporting this. A former special assistant for NOAA says, quote, they're trying to bill me for health insurance after I was fired. I had no coverage. It's just more salt in the wound on how incompetent all of this has been, unquote. Meanwhile, a NOAA spokesperson said the agency can't comment on ongoing personnel matters and sent them over to the Office of Personnel Management. A spokesperson there said they don't have payroll information or any other records like that, so they can't help you. And the Commerce Department, which oversees NOAA, also had no response. Smooth machine. Smoothly. So well-oiled machine. After NBC News asked about this problem with NOAA, probationary employees got an acknowledgement of a possible error from the agency. Quote, our office has been made aware you may have gotten a debt note from the National Finance Center. Please know we're working to resolve this. No needed action right now. We'll keep you updated.
All I'm doing right now is thinking of all those times I've been on the phone with customer service and they say, to talk to a person, dial 3. Beep. Welcome to the customer service. What are you talking about?
Put you back through the circle.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. This is the company. I'm just going to call them a company now because this is what it feels like. This is a company that's running our wars, running our everything. If they can't get this right, no wonder why. Peace has been achieved, and Iran's like, oh no, it has not.
Well, exactly.
We were talking about this last week. It's not even going with your gut anymore. It's just, let's see what happens. Not like I have a really good feeling about this. No,
let's do this.
It's like, hey guys, send the letters out. See what happens.
Sabrina Valenti, a former budget analyst at NOAA, says, I was fired 4 months ago and I still don't have proof that I was fired. And other workers say they can't access their health benefits that should have been available to them during reinstatement. One former worker at NOAA said she had surgery in April when she was on administrative leave. After she had the surgery, she found out her health coverage is not active. But at least, thank goodness NBC stepped in.
Right.
And alerted the people within this agency that this is going on, because otherwise it doesn't seem like they had any idea.
Well, and that's the bigger problem, is that in order for them to do something, light has to be shown down to make them scurry. This is the gentleman in Missouri with his farming all over again. He didn't get his payment. He put something out there. He got a lot of attention. He got his payment. And now he's like, Trump is amazing.
Yeah.
So now that NBC has come out there and say, and also us, because, you know, we're as big as NBC.
Oh, sure.
They'll probably fix it within the next 2 weeks. We'll probably hear something in a blurb somewhere on a website.
Well, it's on NBC to follow up on this and to make sure something actually gets done.
I think if you get fired via this administration and through DOGE, you shouldn't have to show any proof. They'll be like, how'd you lose your job? And you show DOGE. And like, fair enough.
Leave it at that. News is coming up next. When we return, Jim Santel will be here. We're going to talk about a number of decisions from the U.S. Supreme Court. Stay with us. You're listening to Matt and Air on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network. Good morning. Welcome to Matt and Air on Air. Jane Matt and Air, Greg Bach, Kelly Tini on the board, coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. Join us, call or text at 855-752-4842. You can also leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Joining us now, you can catch him Saturday mornings across the network from 9 to 11. It's fantastic. It's called Amicus, a Law Review. Jim Santel is here, acting attorney, former U.S. attorney. Having you here gives us the ability to say, Jim, we are attorney adjacent.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And it's great to be adjacent with you every Thursday morning, maybe even more than that. And
sometimes.
So glad to be with you once again.
Glad to have you with us, Jim. Yeah. There have been a couple of decisions that have come out from the Supreme Court this morning before we're going to move on to talk about another decision we want to cover. But what has happened this morning?
Sure. We've got 10 decisions going into this morning yet to be decided. Four of them, the one that's going to attract the most attention, not to minimize the significance of the others, is a case involving Planned Parenthood. And it is arguably about abortion as well. The issue is whether or not, came out of South Carolina, 2018, there's a governor there who yanked Medicaid funding for the state's two Planned Parenthood clinics there. And again, what happens is that the court determines whether or not that is legal, basically under the Medicaid statutes and laws, and finds in the end that by a 6-3 majority, right down lines, as we often talk, we've got a majority saying no, that the challengers, basically including a patient of one of the clinics who brings this lawsuit saying you're depriving me of my right to medical care, basically the court says you're out of luck. You do not have a right of action under the Medicaid laws to sue. And for that reason, your case is over. And so it is a very significant case, arguably less about abortion, but it really is about abortion.
Yes.
Just because of the Medicaid cast that it has. And again, 6-3, you've got, as far as I can tell already, some scathing dissents from the dissenters, not surprisingly. And then three other cases. We're still waiting for what it's worth. Let's do the inventory here very quickly.
Sure.
We've got six other cases involving that thing called birthright citizenship. We've got LGBT books in schools for children. You've got that preventive health care matter involving whether or not insurance companies have to provide preventive health care, according to the recommendations of some task forces, and a couple of other matters as well. There's a race and redistricting case as well. Many, many things going on here. We're going to be obviously attentive. I think they're going to come back again tomorrow, maybe next week. But this is that feverish time, and this morning is no exception.
Just the cases you're going over there, I mean, LGBTQ books in schools, I don't want to say it's a waste of time, but it feels like there's other things they could be doing. This is such a ridiculous point to be taking all the way to the Supreme Court. This is seems like a book banning issue, which
on the face
of the Constitution seems like, well, this shouldn't even make it out of the lowest courts. It should just be like, no,
exactly.
You let the books be there. But the other one, there's so many now you just mentioned, but
the preventive health care, perhaps under Obamacare. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that one that was one of the main selling points of the entire package to begin with, is that you can now get your mammograms, you can get your physicals, there's so many opportunities to stay healthy. Cause as we know, healthy citizens add to the economy are better for the economy.
Right.
Right. And again, tend not, therefore, earlier on when they're healthy, not to have to use health insurance, has that economic impact as well. Mm-hmm. And here the challenge again is, again, as to Obamacare, task forces, medical people, again, know what they're talking about. They're the experts. And they say, you know what? These cancer screenings, for example, they do, Greg, to your good point, they do, in fact, help our society. They keep you aware of the fact if you may, in fact, have a serious disease, and they're preventive in nature. And the challenge is to whether or not these task forces are legitimate. You get rid of the task forces, presumably you get rid of preventive care under Obamacare as well. I'm hopeful on that one based upon the oral arguments. We'll see. Always hard to predict. Yeah. We'll see. But it appears that maybe we've got a majority of the Supreme Court who is going to say once again, that's going a bit too far. And these task forces are properly constituted, therefore saving it. But once again, it is a dangerous enterprise, as all three of us know, to predict what the Supreme Court may or may not do.
Again, that just doesn't make any sense to me. The whole MAHA thing. Okay, we're to make America healthy again. Let's all get healthy. Let's all wear wearables. Let's all be conscious of our health. But let's not cover early screenings. That's right. Completely mm-hmm. backwards.
Let's not endorse vaccines.
I would think every health professional is going to say that any dollar we spend pre-hospitalization is going to be a better dollar than the ones when you're in hospital.
Right. And frankly, again, in the category of the word amicus, you've got a whole bunch of amicus briefs, friends of the court, written, Jane, just by those medical providers saying, this is a good thing. Let's prevent disease. Let's prevent healthcare challenges. Mm-hmm. The other piece of this, of course, that really animates it, maybe at its beginning, is that among the preventive care is for PrEP and other HIV preventive medicines. So once again, that's probably wagging this dog. We just don't like anything related to that disease, and in particular, the LGBTQIA community. Plainly, others can also incur and get HIV, but that's probably behind this too. Very sad.
In 2025, the year of our Lord, I never understood, I just like saying that, during Pride Month, this is a message to all of you conservative, gays, lesbians, whatever, queer friends. You thought you were voting for Trump maybe because you don't really believe in the trans movement that freaks you out or whatever, but the trans groups, the trans individuals were the first group to go after.
Yes.
You are next.
Obergefell is next.
Yeah.
Right.
It is.
There are already legislative initiatives percolating up in state courts to overturn Obergefell and attack that. They may not get to our national attention right away. But you're right, Jane. You're right, Greg. This is a part of an overall national initiative. We've got the power now. We've got the Supreme Court. We've got the White House. We have the Congress, too. Not that they engage in any of mm-hmm. this. They're completely ineffective in many of these. But let's move on this. This is that opportunity. And it sets back things. As Sonia Sotomayor says, Galena Kagan, Ketanji Brown Jackson, a whole series of dissents in many cases, including one actually involving fuel providers and fuel manufacturers from just Friday. She talks about how the court is going to be seen more and more as a corporate entity that protects corporations. And that's not what America looks to the court to do. Those are the challenges when these things happen. The impressions of Americans about what their highest court and other branches of government do, they're all important. And today we are really in we're in a fight. And we're in a bad situation because of the need to push back on all of that.
Well, a good day for Amy Coney Barrett. She's back in good graces again because she does things Republicans don't like. And then she does something like this and she's back in the fold. It's mm-hmm. all good. Jim Santel is here. He's the host of Amicus Law Review on Saturdays across the network from 9 until 11. We are going to talk about this now. Jim, switch gears a little bit. This decision by the Supreme Court essentially gives the president a green light for the deportation programs lower courts have found unlawful.
Right. You've got a judge. His name is Brian Murphy, one of those district court judges who is the bastion. He's the standard pushing back on this. This comes out in part that South Sudan case from a number of weeks ago when we had those folks, again, deported and deportable. They're criminals. They're violent criminals. And the question is, when you deport them, nobody disputes that you can or cannot deport them. The question is, in our law, you've got to give them an opportunity to know where they're going, where the plane will land.
Right.
And ultimately, to object to that, that's due process. Brian Murphy says, before you do this, yes, deport these people. Go ahead, do that. But before you do that, give them that due process. Again, multiple problems here. What the Supreme Court does on Monday, again, here we go, my friends, the shadow docket, emergency order here. One sentence basically says we're overturning the lower court, and Donald Trump, you can go ahead and deport these people. Fascinating, because by Monday afternoon, Tuesday morning, the judge says, I'm looking at this order. It's a non-order. Nothing about it, Supreme Court. Overrules my order from a couple of months ago, and he directs the Department of Justice to continue to give them due process. Of course, the White House goes crazy and says, we're running back into court. We've got to be, you, the Supreme Court, you got to tell this out of control judge that he is out of control. Stop that from happening. And that's where we are today, in part because of the craziness of the deportation problem to begin with, not doing it according to due process. And it is aggravated by the fact that we've got a Supreme Court that is no longer giving you reasons for doing what it is doing in these major situations. And the lower district court doesn't take advantage of it, does what a judge should do and says, I'm looking at these two things. They're not inconsistent. And even though, as you've noted, the representative of the White House says, get those deportation planes going, get them on the tarmac. The reality is that it's confusing. It is a mess. And we have that yet to decide now by the Supreme Court. Another, they're back again. What does John Roberts say now about what his order was on Monday? It's craziness.
Well, this actually harkens back to what we were speaking to earlier regarding the congressional maps with the Wisconsin State Supreme Court. Yes. They give no decision. They give no reason. Right. And to me, and what you're saying, I'm hearing, Jim, is that when the court gives little to no reason why they decide on something, that gives the lower courts the reason to say, well, you didn't tell me, so I'm going to do it anyways. Right. Why does the court, whether it's state supreme or U.S. Supreme, not have a responsibility to provide explanation for their decisions?
Explain their arguments.
Exactly. And, you know, some of this has got to happen fairly quickly. Question again, largely, if this emergency docket really is all that a bunch of emergency in many of these cases. But beyond that, you know what? You, all three of you, including Calvin, everybody at Civic Media, lawyers, judges, medical people, teachers, masons, bankers, everybody out there, sometimes you have to pull an all-nighter, right? And you've got to sit down and say, okay, I'm going to issue this tomorrow at noon. Get the law clerks in here. We got to write all this out. And yeah, it may keep you from your home in Georgetown or Bethesda, but for that evening, but you got to get this done. And you got to tell us, that's a really important point. I'll take my tongue out of my cheek. You got to tell us what is going on here. So number one, the American people have some sense of the reason for you doing what you're doing. And then to the point that we're also making, there's instruction to the lower courts. Absent that, you've got mayhem. And that's really what's going on right now on Thursday morning with respect to these deportees. They're apparently in Djibouti right now, and they're in some conference room, and we don't know what their status is. They're giving them a little bit of due process. And again, Stephen Miller going nuts, of course, with the judge too, saying we've got to rein him in. Lots of bad behavior going on here, and none of it needed, none of it focusing on the real issues in America.
We've only got about a minute left, Jim, before we go to break. I just do want to say it certainly seems like the Roberts Court has embraced this shadow docket like no other Supreme Court we have ever, ever had.
Absolutely. My count, it might be a loft, but 19 emergency orders since January 20th. All of them, one sentence, unsigned. Yes, you get a sense of who the dissenters are, but that's about it. And sometimes they do write dissents, but that's pretty much it. That's not the way this should work.
We're going to continue our conversation with Jim Santel on the other side. Stay close. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air on the statewide, countrywide. Get us global on the app. Civic Media Radio Network. Don't go away.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Good morning. Welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Sweet Calby on the board, coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. Join us, call or text at 855-752-4842. You can also leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Jim Santel joins us every Thursday at this time. Our friend and colleague and host of Amicus, a law review, Saturday mornings 9 to 11 across the network. I highly encourage you to check out the show. You can also listen to former podcast or old podcasts if you can't listen live.
Yes, indeed.
Just go to civicmedia.us and click on shows and look for Amicus, a law review. This broke, Jim, as we were in break there. I wanted to talk about this just briefly. U.S. House bill would prohibit federal immigration agents from wearing masks while making immigration arrests. This was sponsored by two Democrats from New York State. I don't understand how it's okay that we have people in jeans and jackets and flannel shirts with masks on who are not required to identify themselves and just can snatch people off the street and throw them in a van. I don't understand how that's legal in this country.
I don't understand it either. In practice, there are some great problems with it. The general policy is in the federal system, you are transparent. And if you're going to arrest Jim Santel, you show up at the door, you show up at his place of work on the street, and you say, my name is Greg Bach, and I am an ICE agent. I am here to arrest you. I've got a warrant, or I've got probable cause to do so. That not only is good law enforcement, what else does it do? It ensures that there is nothing disastrous that happens, right? Virtually everybody knows that if you've got a police officer who's going to arrest you, what you don't do is take that police officer on. It will go badly for everybody,
yes,
including you. So it minimizes the danger of that already confrontational engagement. It ensures transparency for the government. All good things. There are some remote and sort of small areas where, because of maybe an undercover operation,
right,
SWAT operations, maybe you don't do it there. But the general federal principle is openness, and we let you know what's going on. The other piece of this, I'm guessing that the legislation is prompted also by legislative history that shows us, you've reported on this, you've talked about this more and more, you've got these incidents where people are showing up in garages and places who are not law enforcement,
right,
and they say they are.
Right.
And the next thing you know, we've got attempted kidnapping. Some of them are thwarted. Some of them are not.
Sexual
that
assaults.
That can't be America either.
Right. Right.
Minnesota. He dressed up as an officer. I mean,
right.
And
right.
He
and got entry and exactly. Right. Right. So this is good. It again, in the category of why should we have to do this? The answer is we do, just because. Apparently, I'm embarrassed to say, we've got federal law enforcement, state law enforcement, who are not doing their jobs in a professional way. Not the great majority of them are. But these folks who are doing this with the masks on, looking like ninja warriors, that is not consistent with anything that I understood for 30 years of law enforcement. And I am horrified by it, again, with those narrow exceptions of urgent and
undercover operations. Yes,
right,
of course.
Exactly, right.
And this may be a horribly naive question in the light of today's court system and all that stuff, but doesn't it also present an opportunity for a lawyer to come in and say, well, I want to challenge this arrest because the person didn't identify themselves. They weren't dressed. They were not part of one of these emergency operations that require undercover officers to participate. This was literally showing up to a Walmart and arresting someone and just taking them away. Doesn't that provide grounds for appeal? Or because these are immigration cases, no one seems to care that much. But I feel like that first step of being completely shielded and not having any sort of ID on you means that, like, they have a right to fight that their constitutional rights are violated.
It should, right? We've talked before in other circumstances about a notion called prosecutorial misconduct, law enforcement misconduct. And yes, indeed, ultimately, it may well be that the arrest would have happened. But there is something in our nation's DNA that says in the moment you have a right to be treated fairly and decently. That's implicit, if not explicit, in our Constitution. And again, bad things can happen. There can be 1983 actions alleging, again, a violation of civil rights, those kinds of things. That's a civil action, but all kinds of things can flow from it. And you add that into other challenges to the underlying prosecution that go to the substance of the charges. And in the end, you've got a laundry list for the judge to take a look at, who may say, in the end, maybe one or two of these things I'm willing to overlook, but you've got a whole series of problems with law enforcement acting as it is. And for that reason, I'm going to dismiss the charges or I'm going to sanction the government in some way. Judges can do those kinds of things when they see these kinds of violations.
Again, I just don't understand how we think this is okay in this country. Are we teaching our nine-year-olds that if a white, unmarked van pulls up when you're riding the bike in front of the house and unmasked, unidentified men jump out, you should just jump in the van, Susie? Is that what we're teaching our kids? No, we're not. Yeah. So don't tell me that this is okay, that this is American justice.
And that's the practical problem on the streets for youth, for adults. And we've seen that as we have just been talking. It is unfortunately increasing in number and ferocity. Greg, you just mentioned the horrific, disastrous catastrophe of the assassinations in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
Other instances of it as well. That's what animates this good legislation. It probably won't see the light of day inside this house because of the political realities there, but that's where we are.
Listen to Jim Santel Saturdays 9 to 11 across the network. Amicus, a law review. Thank you so very much for your time, my friend. We will see you in a week.
Always a pleasure, my friends. And we'll look forward to more Supreme Court cases coming out. And we'll talk with you about all those as well.
Sounds great. We got news coming up next. Stay close. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.